If McLuhan was so smart, why did he talk about the effects of the printing press and the book on humans instead of talking about maybe these effects were due to humans not being in their power?
Okay, that's all he talked about. Now, here's the point. What is the image you have of a human being? Some chemical body? What is a human? He knew that the extension of the eyes in the new media, where extension of senses, was what you were. And you need to become aware that that's what you were made up of, not a biological image. You were made up of these structures, and you better become aware of how they are limiting your power. That's what made him revolutionary. He anticipated ION and was telling us how to take on our power, and that's why he got in big trouble everywhere. Now, Ed, you think that we're saying take your own power does it. That sentence tells you nothing until you know who you are, and you're made up of these media environments, and you need to notice those extensions of yourselves to recognize what you have to see through. So if you don't understand what that is, that's your problem, because what I said is obvious. If you don't get it, then you got to do a little more homework and study that old guy, Cogger McClune, because what I just said is 100% accurate. It was about taking your own power. He even noticed that the electric media made you become autonomous. He predicted way before Wired magazine or any other ideologue of the Wired generation. But you have to know McLuhan said that. See, you're going by what you heard McLuhan said. But McLuhan said way more than what he wrote.
Am I not going to be able to be in my power if I cannot understand what Marshall McLuhan said about my chemical body, in my electronic
exactly.
body,
and that is the
I
point.
Will not now, ever be able to get into my power until I understand Marshall McLuhan.
Exactly, because you need to know all, and that's an important part of all. Now, ION would say that what Bob's emphasizing here is postgraduate work. I don't mind you doing the early kindergarten work of coming into power and declaring I am me and goddess and all that. But later, you're going to find that that leads into a conundrum, and you're going to need postgraduate work to figure out how to acquire your power on a deeper level.
Well, the separation between power and authority.
Which is different in oral cultures than from literate cultures and from electronic cultures.
Which are merging.
That's right. And that really complicates the issue about what you think you're thinking about and writing about.
Well, let's simplify.
Keep it simple for the kindergarten. No problem.
Now, easy there, Trigger.
No, you ease off.
How do you recognize your reflection in the mirror?
Well, it's obvious.
Well, then it's so obvious, what is it?
Your eye.
No.
That's how you recognize your reflection in the mirror.
No. Your eye sees all kinds of things. What if you look at an angle and you see somebody else? How can you physically recognize your image in the mirror that you know that it's you?
Remember, McLuhan called all media analogical mirrors, so we're still within the world of McLuhan, multi-sensory mirrors. And I say with the point, you use your eye. What's the distinction you're making if you don't use your eye?
Okay. If a blind person looks in the mirror, why do they recognize their image?
Well, I guess they don't.
Well, they most certainly do.
How do they do that?
Because the eye is just an auxiliary outside medium that's used, just as Marshall McLuhan would quote.
So you're saying that the blind person recognizes the image because it's within the mental reflective process?
Of course.
Okay, that's what you mean by mirror, so you didn't qualify which mirror you meant when you said how to recognize.
Well, I mean, like a bathroom mirror, when you go to shave, how do you know you're shaving you?
You have to use your eyes. Now, how could a blind person see that image if you assume they're conventionally blind?
Well, they conventionally are.
But they use their inner image.
Correct, and it becomes a repetitive anomaly. A repetitive anomaly is how you have the capacity to recognize yourself in a photograph.
Come on. We're sticking with the blind people who can't see, and I'm trying to give you the benefit of the doubt here. You're saying they can know and see themselves without sight.
They do.
What is that function that is allows them to qualify for recognizing their mirror?
The very non-physical we're trying to convince you to come into your power regarding.
So you're saying we recognize the mirror through non-physical?
Yes, only.
Well, that's exactly what McLuhan's point was, but carry on. So what's your point about that? Right. How are you different from McLuhan on that point?
We're not different, Bob. We're not against.
Okay. So why'd you bring up this mirror thing?
So you could have a chance to consider that the power, not the authority, regarding the place of power. And that's what Marshall was trying to complete. He didn't, but that's what he was trying to complete. But if you could come into your power without the authority, then you wouldn't have anything to come against or defend or placate regarding. If you could simplify it so you could just get your power, then you get it. And if you get it and you don't have to know all the other stuff, then you can have it. It's kind of like, I don't know and I don't care. Well, what's your problem? Well, it must be ignorance and apathy. Because if you get it and you have your power and you get what you want and you come into your place where you know all, then you can know Marshall McLuhan and what he meant and every dynamic that's being presented. Now, yes, that's presenting tactility, but doesn't have to. It certainly can if you desire it, but it's not a prerequisite of experience that has to be wrought. Sounds like a cult to us.
What does?
Marshall McLuhan. If you
no. Anything's a cult. Those who come after, they can always say that was a crude that congealed, and now you're stuck in tradition. Remember, McLuhan always said the first thing he was, it wasn't the McLuhanite. And any McLuhanites are around him, he'd get away from. He's not responsible for those that read his stuff and make him into a cult. So the point is, Ion, are you going to say that everybody failed until Ion showed up?
No, we're not. We're just saying if there's got to be a simple, easy way, or many may not get their place or opportunity to engage the power.
You mean that simple way is as stated through the mouth?
Sure.
You can get people to kindergarten. I don't have a problem with that. But then they will find contrast.
Well, of course. And that's okay. Because if you
of
got
course,
power,
it doesn't matter. They don't even have to find their power. It's all okay, according to Ion. Come on. We caught you on tape many times. And we're no problem with whatever you're doing. You don't have to get your power. You're offering the choice.
We don't offer the choice. You human creators have so much power, you ascertain or push your choice. And we
that's right. You can take any words I say and quibble with them. Granted, it's like Eliot wrote in his poem, Sweeney Agonistes, one character says, I got to use words when I talk to you. I have to use words with Ion, and that's subject to the game playing in double conversations and interpretation. I recognize that Ion does something beyond the words. He massages our inner something, our inner non-physical.
We're just trying to simplify the whole process. So
for what? You're simplifying to turn it into a cult. What are you trying to simplify? You can't even get it clear what you're trying to simplify. Say it. You said it on the show today, on the Zany Mystic Show. Did a very good 25-minute summary of the position of Ion as spoken through words.
So you, as a human creator, can come into your place of power, not authority, with power, then all can be known. All can be known. And you simplify it from the most basic level of.
Do you mean coming into your power, you would not have clothing, you would not have a car, you would not have a cell phone, you would not require those extensions? Is that coming into your power?
No, it has nothing to do with it.
Well, what is the power then that you're talking about acquiring?
Your non-physical and physical merging as one.
Is Saint Germain using cell phones?
Sure.
Right, see? What is the position in relation to technologies in your image of acquiring your power?
There's not one.
Right.
Technology,
so there is no issue.
Technology has nothing to do with it. But if the human creator doesn't come into their place of power, they can have all technology, and it'll do nothing but run them down a rabbit hole.
What is this condition where you're not using technology, even though you are on the side using it, but not run down a rabbit hole? What is the state of expressing that power?
When you come into your place of power, you no longer think. You know. When you know, then you can assert power in all conditions, tactile or otherwise.
Which everybody is doing already, so that you don't know who's in power or not. Because
well,
there's engagement. Well, how would you tell?
When a human creator can summons whatever they want into their reality, when they want it, the way they want it, how they want it, and when they desire
which which technologies would show that person accomplishing that?
Well, I guess it'd be one that has a thought and things show up in their reality just exactly the way they want it.
That's what everybody's doing. Everybody's doing that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but they're bitching about having a gulp full of oil.
You're stating that based on your perception of what's happening in the media.
Mm.
Are they serious? They're just pretending. They're playing with the false premise of contrast.
Mm. Okay.
I think I got them in the corner there, Ed.
Well, okay. Good luck with that. If you come to the place where you know, then it simplifies all of this unknowable things that you discuss with us daily.
Yes, but everybody questions about how to get know that they've arrived at a space of knowing. That's what the main dilemma is for clients that we have.
So how do you know when you know?
Yeah.
You know. When you know, you don't wonder how to know. You know.
Right, and how would anybody else know that you've arrived at that state?
Why would anybody be involved in the conversation from where you come into your power of knowing?
So you agree with my McClone S-inspired video in 1993. Everything's disappeared. That's the state of knowing for those who arrive at knowing, and that's for those that witness the knowing. They have witnessed
even those that witness the knowing don't know, because then they question the knowing that they don't know.
And no one would know who was the knower in that confusion.
And that's perfectly fine, because as long as the individual human creator comes into their power, to hell with everybody else. Oh, wait, that's not what the cult says, is it?
So if your name is called and you respond to that, you're a dupe. You're not in your power, because you showed up to be engaged in the perception of others. It would appear that you have no state of knowing. The knowing would not show up.
And that's been the issue, and why we came forth, the biggest reason why we came forth, is many, 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 many walking on the planet now are ascended, and they're ascended, and they're not going to tell you how to get ascended, and they're not going to tell you how they know they're ascended, and they're going to be so busy pleasing and delighting themselves, they're not going to notice.
And that's exactly McClone's point. He took the major word, imagination, which Ion keeps posting YouTubes on our Dupes of Non-Physical Forum. YouTube's pointing out the rule of imagination. What was McClone's definition of imagination? That which is not embedded in any sense or any extension or faculty of those senses. Not embedded in the senses and not embedded in any extensions of those senses or faculties. That's exactly the knowing condition you're talking about. And that was how you would know someone who's not involved in anything that seems to be collectively noticed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you call it, to bring you into your power, then everybody should be able to.
Do what?
Come into their power.
Well, they certainly have done that and arrived, and we have no way to measure who has arrived or not. As the Evergreen said, that was the error of Krishnamurti. Jiddu Krishnamurti thought there was a way of gauging that someone was more knowing than someone else.
Well, of course.
But what would you judge it by?
You don't judge it. That's the point.
Right. That's my
you
point.
You don't judge it.
That's right. So, you can't judge it.
Well, you just judged it by saying if you didn't figure out more, but have your place of power.
Yes. Figuring out McLuhan is the position of non-judgment.
Hmm.
That's he called it. The technique of suspended judgment.
Well, okay. If you'd say it that way, it sure would take a lot of the wind out of the sails when you start coming to the position that if you don't get Marshall McLuhan, you won't get your power.
Don't and you love to play? Ion, you love to play. You love that we are playing here within language.
We do. And that's why we're pointing out while we're in the corner that the corner is prolifically simple. It's not prolifically detailed, impossibly. You can't get there, can't never get nowhere. Why would you talk to a non-physical that never can give you an answer to anything?
Why would Ed listen to all that stuff from Project Camelot and pose with the very detailed exercise he's engaging in?
Well, he's right there asking.
Yeah, Ed, why do you do that?
I'm just posting, Bob.
Yeah, see? Fully in his power, Ion. He's engaging in all that gobbledygook technology.
Well, the why,
no judgment there.
The why creates a sense of separation. What I'm curious is, before Joyce and McLuhan, how anyone came into their power.
Oh, McLuhan celebrates all of them. I mean, there's nobody who knew the history of culture as much as McLuhan. He cites them all in his books.
But how could they have come into their power and go to this graduate school that you talk about if it was pre-McLuhan and pre-Joyce?
McLuhan had the advantage of showing up at the end of the process, at the time of the end of the beginning, and delineated what everybody else was probing around. But he said everybody, quoting James Joyce's Here Comes Everybody, was part of the magic of creating language. That's the democratic vision there. Not as democratic as politics. The inclusive of everybody and not judging anybody's level of knowing. And the best way to do it is say everybody is creating speech and language and adding to it. It's the great play or the great work.
Well, it's the art of creation.
Yeah. Thought and language.
Okay. Got that. And so, therefore, Marshall McLuhan would then just be the present age of Aquarius that would allow humans to consider the biggest part of that whole dynamic, which is significant, is the bringing up duality and tactility. Because once you get that, then it undoes many of the means, his word, many of the means that humans use as their excuse for not coming into their power, so that they can know that they don't know because someone else might know something else. And what we're saying, validated by Marshall very smoothly, is that once you come into your place of power, you'll very easily not notice all these other, well, if you want to call them technologies, that's okay. We don't have a push against any of that, whatever it is. You ain't even got to the good stuff yet. It's coming. But that whole age of having all power, not authority, but power, that can apply it into your individual personage. Is that too far around the maypole, or is it closer?
No, that was the two conversation response to that is that's exactly what McLuhan said. But the other conversations, McLuhan satirized that. Remember, all his writings are a satire of the human situation, the human comedy, and the result of the two conversations.
Right. He's like, excuse me, sir, are you trying to tell me something?
You never heard a professor ever say that before.
Oh,
he said
not
that.
So much.
He had the gall to not be a professor and to just ham it up and play every day.
And yet did more professing than most others ever alluded to.
Like you, Ion. Voluminous hours of verbal play.
Uh-huh. Which is great. We want it simple.
Well, I don't mind. Keep it simple. Keep it simple. We're doing the Bible. It's a simple document.
Mm-hmm. And if you could get it this way, simply, and see that even in this, some say is not simple, but it most certainly is when you start looking at what the actual word printed press, Gutenberg words are, then all of a sudden it's kind of like, oh. And then oh turns into, wow, okay, I have to do this, and this, and I got it. Right. Okay, well, how do I prove that I got it? Well, your works. Your works, wonders wrought within your works, you'll know. And see, you would acknowledge that this Bible was pre-McLuhan, right?
What do you mean the Bible was pre-McLuhan? Of course it was.
The Bible written, it was? Okay.
McLuhan was the first Bible scholar to point out the duping of the Bible, the mistakes, the problems that the Bible hindered for Christian learners. Nobody Christian scholar ever did that before. I mean, we're talking, you know, in the popular lingo, this guy was a blatant anarchist, raving, psychotic guy, destroying everything, which is what Walter Borwick said when he began to understand what McLuhan was saying. He said, Bob, McLuhan's undermining the very foundations of our Western civilization. I said, exactly, Walter.
Mm-hmm.
Walter never could get over that.
And that serves you well, because Western civilization isn't doing very good on its own volition. So.
Yeah, McLuhan had down. He predicted it. So I could say all that I'm saying, and since nobody knows McLuhan well enough, if I never said it was McLuhan, they'd say, wow, look at all that stuff Bob's saying. I'm just being, quote, honest and telling you where I got the words from. I don't have to. And if I never told you it was from McLuhan, you would never know. And you just think, well, Bob's got a pretty interesting view. How did he come up with that?
You've completed a lot more of McLuhan than McLuhan ever did.
Well, that's the postgraduate work when we get to,
well,
and I was doing
McLuhan
that with Craig today.
Yes, McLuhan got hung up on the difference between power and authority.
That's a simple version.
Oh, granted, yes, that is the most simple, yes.
He understood the difference in the issues as far as one could as a human being at that point, and nobody even got to that level. They're still back in the 19th century. But he didn't have Connie. He didn't have Carolyn. I had the advantage of interacting with someone that kept us on the wide and true path, the wide and open and diverse path of tactile engagement. Nobody had that. I was the lucky guy there, and I agree with you. I have completed McLuhan and moved beyond it. But to understand it helps, you know, to get a little back on it.
Well, how's it working for you?
I can quote. I don't have to be quote. I can do William Blake or do Shakespeare or Dante. You can quote all these guys and what they were pointing to. I like to quote Master Eckhart, which in the 14th century, he said, only the hand that erases writes the true thing. That's trying to write in a writing culture and cancel the effect of writing right there. That's a guy who understood how to take your power in a writing culture. Only when I erase what I wrote do I write the true thing. Imagine trying to say that to the Pope back then.
Sure, or now.
As McLuhan said, if you're interested in the truth, you better lay low. Now, you could say, well, I'm going to take my power and tell them, do
that's
the blaming. I'll do a Blanche syndrome. I own this station and I am that. But other people say, well, Blanche, you're going to end up in jail if you keep that up.
That's authority. That's not power. Blanche showed her power when she came back and said, oh, I didn't mean to offend anyone. That's exercising power.
The one who simplified that dilemma for humans was McLuhan. He pointed out the difference between literate authority and power and electronic authority and power and digital authority and power and pre-literate authority and power so that you had a chance to get a bearing there.
Okay.
Then you launch yourself.
Okay. So now the message to Smyrna, be thou faithful unto death and I will give thee a crown of life. This is significant because this is where it starts coming into the coronation. Now you can let it whirl.
And unto the angel of the church in Smyrna write, these things saith the first and the last, which was dead and is alive. I know thy works, and tribulation, and poverty, but thou art rich. And I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews, and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. Fear none of those things which thou shalt suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you into prison, that ye may be tried, and ye shall have tribulation 10 days. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches.
So in verse 9, I know thy works in tribulation and poverty, but thou art rich. What does that refer to, poverty, but thou art rich?
Got it. And it's parentheses. It's parenthesized. And then the reference comes into Luke 12:21, Romans 2:17, and Romans 3:9. The rich reference is that you have the power, capacity to have all. And I is John speaking, but see, supposedly these are the words of Christ in the reference here, but John's who's doing the writing here. So what's trying to be said is that Jesus knows your works, Jesus knows your trials, tribulations, and poverty. In our world, poverty is the separation of your place of power. Those degrees of separations always will wrought poverty. Because you can never know. It's always who, what, when, where, how, and why. But then John is saying, Jesus said, but thou art rich. And I know the blasphemy of them that say they are Jews and they're not, that means John is saying that Jesus says, I know. Jesus knows. John says Jesus knows the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and they are not. Okay? And they reference Jews here. Remember, Jesus was a Jew. And the Jews reference here is of those in their place of power, within the tribe of power, but are the synagogue of Satan. This is the point that they're trying to bring up, is that it's, you're already rich. Now, I know your works, your tribulations, and your poverties, but what the hell is wrong with you? Because you're already rich. And I know the blasphemy of those other folks that say that they're in power, but they're not, okay? But they're the synagogue of Satan, which is what Satan was created for. So you could blame it on the, or what is it, Flip Wilson said, the devil made me do it. So you could have that point of reference of less than-ness. Anytime you're pointing in this conditional response, it's of less than-ness. So that's what this is referencing. It's saying, I've heard y'all bitching and wallering and crying and moaning about being poor, but you're rich, and I know you're rich. And I know the ones that are running around saying that they're in their power when they're not. And blasphemy, they go to the church of the devil, basically. That was the abridged version, Ed. There might be a bit more added in there than was the original intent. But the flow of it is just that. Okay? Now, the next verse is very significant. Fear none of those things which thou shalt suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you in prison. Now, remember the devil, that's lived. If you find yourself in a prison, you may be tried, and you may have tribulation for 10 days, be tested, or have trouble. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. The point is, if you can come into this basic, instead of tribulation, why don't we call it tactility? If you cause tactility in your life, 10 days of tactility, and if you'll be faithful unto death, meaning give no regard to death, faithful unto death, then I, God, Jesus, will give you a crown of life. That's the coronation that we speak of over and over and over repetitively. And then he rounds it up again, just because of this hearing version. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. He that overcometh shall not be hurt of the second death. And that gives the reference of chapter 13, verse 9, and then the emphasis on 20, verse 14 within Revelation. So the point of this flow of, if you can hear this, hear it. And the Spirit saying to the churches, and the churches are supposed to be, the way they're telling the story here, the churches are supposed to be the bride that Jesus is supposed to return to the earth to marry. That's the point of Jesus coming back to the earth is to take his bride, which would be found in the churches. Well, those churches are the reference here, the separation from Asia Minor, all those attacks of the GNC, are, if you'll prepare yourself in this place of coming into your place of power, remember the tribulation and all the stuff from 9 and 10, makes the reference then that there'll be no hurt of what they're referencing, the second death. And that second death is when you come into your power and then decide to separate from it again. But see, you remember you're reading it from back to front, so that's the coming part. So you got to get through the flood. So that's the reference to that, well, we would say a purging more than that would be referenced to the second death. Okay, good. Are you ready for the message to Pergamos? Okay.
And to the angel of the church in Pergamos write, These things saith he which hath the sharp sword with two edges. I know thy works, and where thou dwellest, even where Satan's seat is. And thou holdest fast my name, and hast not denied my faith, even in those days wherein Antipas was my faithful martyr, who was slain among you, where Satan dwelleth. But I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed unto idols, and to commit fornication. So hast thou also them that hold the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, which thing I hate. Repent, or else I will come unto thee quickly, and will fight against them with the sword of my mouth. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna, and will give him a white stone, and in the stone a new name written, which no man knoweth, saving he that receiveth it.
This starts with Pergamos. That talks about duality in the two edges. That would be in 12. That reference will be in Isaiah chapter 49, verse 2.
Hi, and how come you know all these chapter and verses?
Because this is our gig.
The Bible is your field of expertise?
Absolutely.
And why is that?
It's the simplest, most misunderstood, McLuhanist thing we could find.
What's it mean to say put the name of McLuhanist in there? What does that mean?
The tactility of how humans take the written word and tangle it up vis-a-vis the Gutenberg printing press.
Which is McLuhan's point. So you're saying you're taking McLuhan's view of this.
Of course.
You are taking on McLuhan's view. You're adopting his perception of this.
Yeah.
In the larger scope, what he's saying is he's taking this confusion and he's unraveling it.
That's what McLuhan did.
Of course, simplifying it so you could get a hold of it this way and have a new thought.
Who was Antipas, the faithful martyr?
Now, when you start talking about martyrs, we have no regard for martyrs. That means I'm so powerful, I'll martyr myself so everyone can know I was important. There's not a regard. There's no sainthood for that kind of business.
From your view.
Yeah. Well, that's the one you're asking about, isn't it?
You're critiquing the meme of martyrdom as a successful strategy.
Well, we don't see it as very successful because why would you listen to somebody that couldn't hang around in life?
Yeah, I couldn't put up with language and words.
Right. It's kind of like, we won't do any of those. We were going to say like Dr. Martin Luther King, nobody listened to him at all until he was gone. So, you know, if his words were that good, why didn't he listen to him when he was alive?
Yeah, maybe like Marcel Duchamp, who pretended he didn't make art for 40 years or whatever.
Our goal to become a great artist, because you know once you're dead, everybody will want to buy your works. You'd have to fake leukemia to rev up your business in the painting world, but even so.
What is the doctrine of Balaam who taught Balak?
That's Baal. The golden calf, Bob. You had great fun with that not long ago. This is where they were drinking the gold.
That was our last session with Graham Hancock.
Yes, but I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak, to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel to eat things sacrificed unto idols and commit fornication. This is the rules and the regulations. Now that's found in Numbers 31:16. And so the whole thing, this is what's coming now. Don't forget the flow. John told you these are the things to come. Well, so this Balaam hadn't happened yet. So now the revelation is telling you what's going to happen then, basically pointing out that you are in your power, and you've read this book because you've separated, and in your separation, you're going to the Garden of Eden. So it's telling it past, present, for you to get it. Now, not saying that they are getting it, but they certainly have the opportunity to get it. He's writing these letters to the churches individually. And so the things he's got to say to Pergamos is not the things he had to say to Smyrna. Well, the reason there's a delineation is because if they got it, he didn't tell them how they could possibly mess it up. He left that alone. He only tried to give them words to straighten them out. So when they got to Pergamos, they could look and go, oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, I got it. Look out for Balaam. Balaam's bad news. Don't do that. If you make a sacrifice to your idol, don't eat it.
The good Bible scholars say, Mr. Ion, you're taking what is obvious and pretending it's something else. This was written long after Moses.
No, it wasn't.
They knew about Balaam.
No, it wasn't.
Well, can you prove when it was not? You see, you're saying it wasn't written in 95 A.D. So how can you, quote, prove or support that statement? Why would you believe that it was written in some nether zone of now and was before all that unfolded?
Well, Bob, how did they have a printing press in 95 A.D.?
No.
Did they have a King James Version of the Bible in 95 A.D.?
No.
Did they have a Gutenberg reference that made this paper to print its word on in 95 A.D.?
Well, if you want to keep it on a simple level, I would say no, but all those things did exist exist now.
Okay. Then who's available from the Council of Nicaea to verify this was the exact transcription that they said was okay in the open canon? Anyone.
Who's to verify what you're saying, that this was a repeat, the Bible goes backwards? Who's to verify? What's to verify to back you up?
John,
well, yeah, that was written after Jesus from our visual, our apparent common senses view.
Oh. Well, then.
Yeah, you can say all you want, but can you show me how that was written before and all this?
Yeah. The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him to show him unto his servants things which must shortly come to pass.
Well, did you notice that people think that John the Baptist's work is referring to events after he lived? People adapted to today. Herbert W. Armstrong's church and other churches say this is predicting 2,000 years before what's happening to us now. There's that way of looking at it. That prophecy.
Yeah. Can't go by that, though. There's nothing to prove that, so you can't.
Well, there's a lot of scholarship that thinks it's proving that.
Oh,
I'm not saying it's true or not, but I don't see it.
I'm asking you
to prove that it means that. How can you support the idea the Bible goes backwards?
Well, Bob, here, by the word.
I don't think you can. I'm not saying it's not true, but.
Well,
okay,
Bob,
go ahead. Prove it.
Okay. John, the seven churches which are in Asia, grace be to you and peace from him which is and which was and which is to come. From the seven spirits which are before his throne. And then all the references go back to the point of what is to come. It's clearly that this is the beginning place.
Of what comes after Jesus expired.
No, that's not what it said, because these are the words of Jesus.
Written by John. John claimed they were the words of Jesus.
Well, good, because it was the beginning place. That tells all that's supposed to become.
Okay, Ed, you know, I assume, that most people think the Revelation is about what happened later. You could say it happened during King Henry, or happened during Hitler, or now. You know that's the normal acceptance of it, right?
Well, they got on the wrong start right from the first verse, because the first verse says things which must shortly come to pass. So these have not happened yet.
Things which must come to pass, which is all that. Remember, that's at the end of the Bible. What comes to pass is after this was written, not what happened before it was written.
but then you read the words, if you go by the words that are, it tells about all this, that's the past, what you're saying is the past, as soon to come. The point is, the proof is how it is written.
If you take those first sentences and say everything that happens in the next 23 or 22 verses is what's to come, and it's referencing
the whole revelation. That's the introduction to the entire work of the revelation of John.
You're saying that this is to come, therefore if it refers to Baal and the gold guys with Moses,
that's
then that must be part of what's to come.
Not what's supposed to be, that's what it says is to come.
Probably some people could go in there and say, well, that's not what it says, it's this or that, and they can argue
well,
over it, or they go back.
They've been doing that, that's what split when Henry VIII couldn't get his divorce from Catherine of Aragon. That's what caused the split for the Protestant church and the stuff with.
In this endless argument, and misinterpretation or cohabitation with what they think it means, you're taking a particular view of it. You're saying, no, it means this. You're extracting yourself from the argument and saying, no, it's definitely it means this. Well, those engaged in the argument may not include you because you're
good.
Not engaged in the argument.
Well, that's good. That's all right with us. We still won't change our words.
That's okay. I'm with you on that. I'm not that interested in this document. I'm interested in getting what I get from it, but it's obviously not relevant to my taking my... power.
Well, if it told you how to do it, it'd be significant, wouldn't it?
Does it tell us how to do it in there?
Yes, it does.
And we're going to come up to that. It's going to be in the Revelation document.
Well, I don't know if you will or not.
No. Don't judge me. You're saying it'll be in the next 22, 23 verses, we will see that.
Chapters.
Yeah, chapters. Sorry. Yeah, chapters. It's coming in what we're exegeting right now. It's coming. The answer, what you just were meaning by the answer and how to do it, will be in these chapters.
Yes, of course.
Okay, good. Okay.
Now, you had another question, Ed.
I will come unto thee quickly, saying, repent, or else I will come unto thee quickly and fight against them with the sword of my mouth. Now, what is the reference to the sword of my mouth?
Marshall McLuhan.
What about Zappa? Is he referenced in there?
It would be, because see, Marshall would quote Zappa from that same genre, certainly. It's those that would see the duality. If you get, the duality is, you can't fight with duality. But if duality confounds and eliminates you from surviving, then what good is it? It still is, but you don't have to make it be the focused mean that you're judging your perspective of power. And if you separate power and authority, that's two conversations, but one you can stray away from and one you can embrace if you get this little tidbit of knowledge.
And what is that tidbit?
To know the difference between power and authority.
How can you tell the difference?
Okay, authority has to tell somebody else how powerful you are. Power doesn't want anybody else to know. It'll keep it to itself. Authority would say, I have this screwdriver, and this is how you do it. And you put this Phillips head screwdriver in this Phillips head screw, and you turn it righty is tidy and lefty is loosey, and you go through this whole process. That's describing how you have authority over the handling of a screwdriver. But a good construction worker would just pick up the screwdriver, put the screw in, and move on to the next one and never speak of it.
The authority is those guys trying to tell you something.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly correct. That's great. And that's why we just answer questions, but every question comes back to the point of bringing you into your place of power. Activating the non-physical that you've already got. That's what's so magical about this whole process. It's not like you got to go buy something for this to work for you. It's just to recognize that you already have more than you'll ever use to have your power on this earth as it is in heaven.
45 years ago, Carol and I formed this group, Unknowns Anonymous.
Unknowns Anonymous, that's right.
That was following the definition of power. We do not want to tell anybody we have power. We have nothing to tell anybody.
That's exactly correct. And then you're so busy pleasing and delighting yourself, you didn't even notice that anyone else noticed or didn't notice that you did. Now, Ed, this is very significant because all through history, people would give you riddles regarding it. Nostradamus was quite infamous for it. Nostradamus, because why didn't he just say it? Well, because he was under a queen that would have lopped off his genitalia and or his head if he'd gotten anywhere crossways with the queen of the days. What? Not her power. Authority. That's why it had to get all melted together into this other type of wordy words that you could strew any way you want to, because you didn't want to just say it, because if you just say it, then everybody can figure it out. Everybody knows how to use a screwdriver.
People wonder, why would Joyce write such a complex book in the 30s? Well, he was up against the Nazis.
Exactly correct, and never finished it.
Yeah, so that he looked like he didn't get to say anything. He kept the option of not, I'm not trying to tell you anything, he kept that obvious so that the tellers would not overreact.
The answer is ibbly bibbly squibbly bob.
Sounds like me, doesn't it?
On page 16, what do you mean? 16 is right there in black and white. What do you mean you can't prove this? It's on page 16. Did you not really look at my work, and now you're asking me about my work and you didn't even bother to read it? What's up with you? How's that work? Oh, wow. We can't believe that you'd be the professor of any college.
Now, Ed, he's quoting McLuhan's lines in the Woody Allen movie, Annie Hall.
Yeah.
Ian likes to quote McLuhan. What was the point I was going to make? I don't remember. Sorry.
It's all right.
I wouldn't tell you anyways.
That's right. That's right. Good. Yeah.
You know, considering that, you know, those that take power, the member of a team, Unknowns Anonymous, they're not telling anybody anything. They got great power, and they know it, and they notice that people are strutting around in the public square claiming that they have power, but it's really just authority, and they're laughing in the corner at these idiots who are trying to tell people something. I think in that midst, a very appropriate statement made by an academic who is paid to tell people stuff and talk in people's sleep to say, you're trying to tell me something. That's just as powerful as Jesus going in and knocking over the banker's table in the money changer land. You know, it's the same equal. Very good effort by Mr. McLuhan. And then what does he say in Woody Allen? He says, you think my whole fallacy is wrong. There's a guy who's not trying to tell you anything.
Okay. And what was your other question, Ed?
Okay, and we'll give him a white stone, and in the stone, a new name written. What does that mean, a new name written?
A new name, your name of power. Oh. The white stone is the purity that will change your RNA and will be the essence of your new DNA equivalent.
That would be your second death.
Pretty much. That's a simplified way of saying it, but yes.
What I just said is a simple version.
Yeah, and that's good.
The complex way is to talk about the dialectic between RNA and DNA.
Yeah, that's how it'll take place. That's what the white stone will do. And a lot of people picked up on this and became crystal lickers over it.
Right, didn't Sheila find the white stone on her travels after the black stone?
She did. Yeah. She did. And then the black stone jumped back in her suitcase.
Yeah, after she found the white stone. It was balanced. That's why she lost the black stone so she could find the white stone. Then the black stone agreed to come back.
No problem.
Because there would be a duality there, which is
or
symmetry.
Or maybe TSA that took it out the first suitcase, forwarded it on her next leg of the trip, and put it back in when she went back through the security the second time. But that's just argument.
That's a simple version. That's a simple version, Ion.
Simple version that TSA could pick a rock out of a suitcase in Long Island and then move it to California for the next trip. Yeah, that's the simple version. That's right, Bob. To know that that was going to fly then and have this rock put back there and take the black one out and put the white one back. Yeah, that's true. That's right. And then you question if you all are marvelous human creators or not.
So, Ed, I just did a 3-minute complification so the Nazis would not start shooting at JW. He just did a bibbly bobbly over past, present, and future.
Okay. Now, the white rock, and then, okay.
The Bible appears to use no in its truest sense.
Yes.
So what you explained about the new name written in the stone, then that makes sense when it says, which no man knoweth, saving he that receiveth it.
From the first book of the Bible, no man would know it, but they will know it, because that's a future thing. Before Revelation, there wasn't anything. So the point is that this is saying that no man will know it. Well, if this is the last book of the Bible and no man can know it, then you're pretty much screwed, aren't you? So, good. Okay.
Fine. TSA is the name for the transportation security or something?
Yes.
That's what they're called at the airport? Yes. TSA, okay.
They who give you the rectal scan, full cavity searches if you require them.
Oh, those are the aliens, yes.
Okay. Well, not all of them, but...
Yeah, they're aliens, and they're always looking for the aliens that are violating the TSA guidelines.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You can take an 8-inch stiletto heel, which could bash through the skull of any human creator. That's okay. But a pair of tweezers, you know, that can take down a 777 or an Airbus. A pair of tweezers.
That's interesting. Do they let high heels on the plane?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Very good. You just blew out the whole guideline thing.
This is a shoe. Now, you get a mad woman with a stiletto heel and think she couldn't put that through your skull. They ain't slept with many women, I'm telling you that. But then you got somebody with a pair of tweezers or snippers or something. No, this is a weapon. This is a weapon.
Has anybody pointed out the hypocrisy of the stiletto versus the little nail clipper?
Oh, Bob, we're probably pretty sure, but...
That you're the only one who did. Now, that's a good one, Ed. What do you think of that? It just collapses the whole premise of security.
Well, if they're so secure, how could somebody get in with an underwear full of bomb material for the Christmas Day bombing in Michigan? How do you slip that by with a panty full of something to blow up?
They just get stupider and more blatant in the contradictions of their power to see who falls for it.
Pretty much.
And those that fall for it, that kowtowed before the regulations since the Patriot Bill came in, are total fools. And they're distracted because they start protesting against the bill. They should just point out a few irregularities like you just did.
Now, wait a second, Bob. Here's a real good key point on what you're talking about here. Ed, let me read this again. Come back to it again. Read 17 again. There's something else there.
He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna.
Hidden manna. That means that it's obviously going to be here, but so far in book one, it's hidden. So just mark that and then continue.
Yeah, that props up your case that it's what's to come. It hasn't happened yet.
Well, of course.
And will give him a white stone, and in the stone a new name written, which no man knoweth, saving he that receiveth it.
Ah! So that means that everybody that knows, that receive it, and no man will knoweth if he hasn't received it. A new name written, recognizes a new name written, which no man knoweth, saying he that receiveth it. So, them that's going to come into their power, Bob, they ain't telling nobody. If this turns into a cult, it's going to be a secret one, a party of one.
Yeah, and McLuhan used to like Wyndham Lewis, who he claimed was a one-man army. What's interesting, the increasing meatball concentration camp that post-World War II society became, where you're forced to communicate, you're forced to declare what you are. That's what's so brilliant about McLuhan's move. He went out there and was able to say nothing and maintain his private power while appearing to communicate the hell out of everybody. That's what he was doing, because you couldn't stop communicating in such a surveilled society.
It was very hard to disappear, so to speak. And if you could disappear, you could sneak back in as McLuhan did, and he did say that he was there to infiltrate, quote, decent, unquote, society. That's what he said. The real artist, quote, in the 40s had to infiltrate decent society, which, you know, was fascist society. And he started creating gobbledygook, managed to inspire people with his gobbledygook, taken from Finnegan's Wake, to reestablish the sovereignty of those that do not tell you anything.
Okay, so now the message to Thyatira.
And unto the angel of the church in Thyatira write, These things saith the Son of God, who hath his eyes like unto a flame of fire, and his feet are like fine brass. I know thy works and charity and service and faith, and thy patience and thy works, and the last to be more than the first. Notwithstanding, I have a few things against thee, because thou sufferest that woman Jezebel, which calleth herself a prophetess, to teach and to seduce my servants to commit fornication, and to eat things sacrificed unto idols. And I gave her space to repent of her fornication, and she repented not. Behold, I will cast her into a bed, and them that commit adultery with her into great tribulation, except they repent of their deeds. And I will kill her children with death, and all the churches shall know that I am he which searcheth the reins and hearts. And I will give unto every one of you according to your works. But unto you I say, and unto the rest in Thyatira, as many as have not this doctrine, and which have not known the depths of Satan as they speak, I will put upon you none other burden. But that which ye have already, hold fast till I come. And he that overcometh and keepeth my works unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations. And he shall rule them with a rod of iron, as the vessels of a potter shall they be broken to shivers, even as I received of my Father. And I will give him the morning star. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches.